I remember my mother would churn butter, you know, and Dad would use the butter that my mother churned for the popcorn at the movie. And he had a popper, and he would sell buttered popcorn for 2 cents. And I said, Dad, you lose money every bag you sell. And he said, yeah, but it's fun. I said, but they all take a dime's worth of butter and give you 2 cents for that great big sack of popcorn. He said, yeah, but have you ever looked at their pants when they come out? He said, I said, I sell my popcorn in them old cheap brown bags. He said, in silk shoe. And he said, they go out, they just a solid mass of butter all over their pants. And he thought that was really funny. He enjoyed seeing somebody come out of his movie house with butter all up and down their pants.
That was the late Fred Early. He grew up and lived in Overton, Missouri. Along with about 24 other lifelong residents of the Missouri River Valley, Early shared his story with the Missouri River Folk History Project. My name is Trevor Harris, and in the next half an hour on Thinking Out Loud, you'll hear excerpts from a pair of oral histories collected around 2004 by Boonville resident Meredith Lovely.
I love to collect people's stories, also known as oral histories. And I started doing this quite a while ago when I was living in Chicago. I worked for a museum, and I went out and I sat in this woman's living room, and she had been a teacher at a one-room schoolhouse, and I got to hear her story. And I was hooked. So I've been doing that off and on ever since.
Now, about 10 years ago, you tapped into a very specific population of people to interview and collect oral histories of. Can you tell me about that?
I ran into Steve Johnson, who was a friend of mine, and he was with Missouri River Communities Network at the time and still is. And they were very involved in Lewis and Clark, and people had been wandering into his tent at these various fairs that they were going to and telling him stories about the river. And I had just been having a wonderful time talking to Hudson Clay, who was a fifth-generation farmer along the Missouri River. And I had become fascinated with these little river towns after moving here. And he was just amazing because he was in his 90s, and he had lived in the same spot all his life. I had moved 9 times. His family for generations had been there. And he was connected with, that family was connected with Wolf's Point, which eventually became Lupus, Missouri. I decided that I would record Hudson Clay's oral history. So it was so fascinating to me to do this. And then when I ran into Steve, and Steve was telling me about all these people that are walking into the tent with these amazing river stories, I said, well, let's do something, you know. And he said, well, why don't you see about getting a grant? And we could be your umbrella organization. And maybe I can even find you an intern, like either a Vista or AmeriCorps, what it was. Yeah. And Kate Gorman, turns out she had just returned from Australia, where she had gotten a film degree, and she was now at the Missouri River Communities Network. And so the two of us got together. I started writing grants, and we applied to foundations. We got enough money to buy equipment, to pay her a stipend and my stipend, and away we went in a car with our equipment, knocking on doors, and the very first person that we were introduced to was Fred Early.
My name is Fred Early. I was born in Overton, Missouri, on December the 7th, 1922.
And do you have, was there anything unusual about how you got your name?
Well, how I got my name? well, maybe I shouldn't tell you, but I'll tell you anyway, Meredith. I had an uncle that was named Oscar LeBou, lived in Blackwater, and my mother said, now I want to name him Oscar, and Dad said, okay. And then they went along for a week or two and didn't give me a middle name or a first name, and said, one day the train came in and a traveling salesman that went from Kansas City to St. Louis and stopped at all the little burgs, you know, and stayed overnight and then took the order of all the stores for the merchandise that he was to send them, he stopped by and said, "Hey, that's a cute baby. So what's his name?" My mom said, "Well, we're going to name him Oscar, but we haven't chosen the middle name." And he said, "Well, put the Fred to it, and his suit is coming." So she named me Oscar Fred Early. And years and years went by, and I never did get any suit. So one day his son moved to Boonville from Kansas, or from St. Louis is where he lived the last time. And he joined our church over there. And one day I was president of the council, and he was on the council. And I said, "Ralph, you owe me a suit." And he said, "Well, why do I owe you a suit?" And I said, "Well, when your father was traveling salesman going through the circuit, and he stopped at Overton one day, and he told my mom if she named me Fred, that he would buy me a suit." And I never did get a suit, and I feel that since you're his son, you owe me a suit. He said, "Well, I don't think you're going to get a suit out of me, but I'm glad to know the story anyway of how you got your name." He said, "You were named after my father." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I sure like my dad, so I guess I'll have to like you too." The little town of Overton originally was right on the river, which was like a mile from where Overton was when they built it and moved away from the river. It's a mile exactly from the railroad crossing there in Overton down to the end of 98, and that's where they just ran the road and quit, and that's where they, you know, picked up from the ferry at that time, and that's why they had a road, and eventually they graveled that road, but it was just a country road is all it was. Overton then established and started building, built like 7 or 8 houses. All there ever was in Overton, never was very much there, but it was a hub of a community kind of thing for us. They shipped livestock from there and had a big store, and we drew customers from, 8-9 miles away that came to the store, regular customers. Kind of like Snotty's store over across the river now is the closest thing that I know of to it.
The store sat down in the bottom, and then where was your house in relation to that?
The store was like 150 feet from the depot that the railroad, Missouri Pacific Railroad, built, and then Dad built the store about 150 feet away from the depot. And there were about 8 houses there. They had a post office, and they had a section house for the railroad where the man that worked on the rails and had the crew that kept the rails up in shape lived in that house. They furnished a house for the section boss.
As a child, what did you think of the river?
Well, the river has always fascinated me, Meredith. I like to play along the riverbank, and probably I'm lucky that I'm here talking to you today, because I remember swimming in the Missouri River before I could swim good. I remember ice skating along the bank of the Missouri River, and one of my friend's dogs went out a little farther where we were skating, and a big chunk of ice broke off, and the dog went out in the middle of the river, and we followed him as far as we could run, like halfway to Woodridge, and he still was going, and we just had run through all those willows, and that's hard running when you try to keep up with the current of the river, and we just had to sit down and watch his dog feed around the corner, and I don't know, I never heard from him anymore. Of course, I'm sure he drowned, you know. But George lost his dog because we were doing foolish things. But I like to go to the river, and I like the river, and I like to get in a rowboat with people that would row across the river and see what was on the other side and go down and see the big cave down by Roachport. We knew about that cave before it was ever developed and made into a place where you paid and bought a ticket to go in. We used to go over there in a boat and get off and tie the boat up and go up to the cave and go in the cave as far as I wanted to go. And I never was too much on going into inside caves, and I still don't care about exploring caves. But we had fun. We caught a lot of good fish on the Missouri River. A lot of good duck hunting. But at the time that I grew up, there were no deer around this area, so I was glad when I got along and older years and could see the deer develop into the river bottoms and swim the river and go down and go across the river. That's a thing to see, and I wish I would have seen that when I was younger too. Watch a deer swim that Missouri River is something. And can you believe we had an orchard, like 2-acre orchard up at the top of that hill, and how hard it was to get the apples down the hill. I remember coming down that hill with my dad made a buggy kind of thing and hooked a garden tractor to it. And we could back that thing down the hill and let it pull the garden tractor and have the tractor pulling the other way so it didn't get away. And I lost a bushel of apples right about back of the house there. And you can imagine how they jumped and went. And about midnight, while my mother got me up and said, "Honey, it's raining and the gutters are stopped up, but we need every drop of water we can get off of that roof." And I got out there and looked, and one of those apples had hit the roof and rolled down and got in the downspout. And we weren't getting any water off the roof, so she made me get out and work it over so we get the water off the roof.
That was Fred Early. The Cooper County resident recalled growing up and life along the Missouri River. In 2004 and 2005, Boonville's Meredith Ludwig collected his story and those of about two dozen other elders living along the Missouri River. A central theme of Early's oral history was his work life along the river. Next up, Ludwig introduces us to Lottie Klein, another Missourian who shared her life story with the Missouri River Folk History Project. You're listening to Thinking Out Loud on KVIA.
Lottie Klein was a pioneer woman. I walked into her house and I just knew that I had met someone like no one I'd ever met before. One of the things I loved about her and Fred was that they both knew someone by the name of Mary Taylor. And she and her husband floated in to Taylor's Landing, which you can see it's closed access now, but when you're up over the Missouri River Bridge on I-70, you can see where that access was. And that is the homestead area for the Taylors. And they floated in on a shanty boat. And so Mary Taylor taught Lottie Klein how to hunt. And she taught her how to go deer hunting and how to take care of that, process her own meat. And that's the kind of girl Lottie was.
I'm Charlotte L. Klein.
And what does the L stand for?
Lorraine.
Can you describe the house that you were born in?
It was a two-story house with a porch on the front, with a porch you could walk out upstairs on top of the lower one. It had, there was three rooms downstairs and two upstairs. And they had a little cellar underneath.
How close was the house to the river? What proximity?
Well, at one time the river was at the front yard gate. It cut away all that land down there. The river started cutting the land away. It cut away all the land all up and down the river along here, way back. And it cut in old Overton. And it stopped cutting right at my grandmother's front gate.
Can you describe the river and this area as you first remember it?
Just a big, wide bunch of water that never spring just about came out of its banks. It didn't always cover the whole area like it did in 93. Now, 93, it covered everything. But a lot of times in the spring, it would just come out and come over what we call the low ground. And then it would go back. But that was when I guess it had a lot more room to spread out than it has now.
What were your earliest memories of the Missouri River?
When I was about, maybe 4 or 5 years old. We'd go down there to the river and just mess around, not doing anything really, just being by the river.
As a child, what did you think about the river? Was it something that you were frightened of, or were you?
I never was afraid of it. I have waded out in it, and I can't swim. My dad always fished down there, and I've always been around the river. I've never been afraid of it, but I'm glad I was on high ground in 93. Now, my husband grew up on an island, on Franklin Island. And now they all learned to swim. If they didn't know how to swim, they threw them in the river and made them swim. That's how they taught them to swim. They took them out and turned them loose. So he lived on that island over there, and then his folks lived there during the Depression. There was two families lived there. They raised the man that owned it at that time. He raised cattle and hogs over there. And the two families took care of the animals. And if they wanted a hog to eat, a lot of the hogs would get loose and go out in the willows and turn to the wild. They'd just go out and shoot a hog and dress it. And then when the Depression came, he told them that he couldn't keep both families. He couldn't afford to pay both families during the Depression. So they made a deal. They both families stayed there and worked. He paid one week, and he paid the other family the next week. And that's how they got through.
That was the late Lottie Klein talking with Boonville resident Meredith Ludwig about Klein's memories of life along the Missouri River. I recently sat down with Ludwig as she reflected on the oral histories she collected as part of the Missouri River Folk History Project in 2004 and 5. Several of your participants have passed on.
A lot of them.
How does that make you feel to know that you got a piece of their story before they checked out?
Well, when the first person passed away, I just was so relieved, you know, that we had captured a piece of that life. Because I think that and as we were doing this, we knew this, that the stories they were telling and the lives they had led were not going to be repeated. That it was going to pass away, just like the river goes by, and they would become just, you know, somebody's dead relative.
Here from a 2004 oral history, Lottie Klein tells Meredith Ludwig about life along the Missouri River during the Great Depression. You're listening to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA.
Things were really tight. My dad and mother were trying to pay this farm off, and the man that had the mortgage, he said he didn't need any more land. So he said that if they would pay the interest on the loan each year, that he wouldn't foreclose on them. He said he didn't have no use for the land. So that's how they got through the Depression. My uncle owned a place over here. This was a bigger farm. It was cut half in two in years past. And my uncle had the other half over yonder, but he lost it during the Depression. But Mom and Dad managed to scrape up enough pennies to pay the interest on this place and kept it.
Were you aware of it at all, economically?
I knew that the money was tight, and because we saved every penny we could get. And Mama sold eggs and cream and butter and things like that, you know, to gather up a little extra money so when the interest came due so she could pay it. We picked up coal along the railroad tracks that fell off the trains to burn in the stove for heat.
Did your father take jobs off the farm?
Yes, he worked on the river in the wintertime when they were putting that, they called it a mat, they put along the river to keep it from cutting. And he worked on there, him and my cousin. My cousin was living here with us, and they walked from here up to the river at Myrna every day to work. And it was cold. It was really cold that winter. I can remember when they come home, they were about frozen, and Mom would build a fire up real good so they could get thawed out. And then they'd get up before daylight the next day and take off again. And he trapped for animals' furs and sold furs. He shipped them out of Overton to St. Louis to a dealer down there.
Now, there was also, I wanted you to talk about the people that Taylor's Landing is named for.
Mr. and Mrs. Taylor? Well, they came here, I guess it was in the early 40s or late 30s. They built a little house down there along the river. Whenever it would flood, when the river would get up, they'd come up here and stay with us. And as soon as the water went down, they'd move back down. Or sometimes we'd wade mud knee-deep to get in back down in there. He tended the channel lights on the river. And she farmed with two big old horses.
Now, when you say tended the channel lights, would you explain that?
They had lights on the pilings along the river to guide the boats up and down the river. And they kept them lit all the time. He would go and put oil in them and take care of the lights. Take his boat, go down and tend the lights. He put them, fill them with oil, and then and relight them and put them back where they were. And then after, well, they knew how long the oil would last. And then he'd go back again and run the lights. He had this boat he called the Tomcat. It had a Model A Ford engine set in the middle of it. And it took every bit of it to pull it. He said that when he'd go down in that whirl around those pilings, it took every bit of that strength of that motor to pull him back up out of there. It's a wonder he didn't drown, but he didn't. He got killed over on the old 40 by a truck. He got hit by a truck.
Talk about Mary a little bit. Do you remember when you first met her?
They came here one day. I was painting on that back door frame. Came around the corner of the house, and I just knew from her, she was a little darker than, you know, because she was Indian. And I thought she was a gypsy. And I called my mother, and they got to visiting. And the next thing you knew, they moved in down here and became friends. They bought a little piece of land down there and built a little house on it. And that house would go almost completely underwater when it would flood. And it was getting a little too deep one time, so he went down there with a little barge in front of that boat, and chopped a hole in the roof and got the furniture out of it and moved out. He'd go down, and we went down there one time, and he wanted something out of the house. And he went down and just went through that hole and just disappeared. And the last thing you saw was a frizz of hair and a little bald knob. Under he went. I thought he never was going to come back up. But he found what he wanted down in there and come back out of there. He could hold his breath a long time. He got killed. And then she built this little house on pilings down there and lived in it for a long time.
Now you say she built.
Yeah. She built it. With a hammer and nails, she built it. She was a farmer. She drove a truck. She was just a do anything person.
What about blacks in the area?
They were a few, not too many. There was a little town over here north of us that's called Browntown, that where quite a few colored lived. And they had a church and a school and a cemetery. I don't know that there was ever any bad trouble or anything with any of them. There was a colored lady named Celie Jackson. She lived she didn't live in Browntown. She lived out in the bottom more. And she used to help my grandmother. When my grandmother needed help, she'd get her to come and help her. But that's the only one I know that, you know, actually worked for the family anywhere.
So you had a certain acceptance, it sounded like, in terms of somebody of a different race. I mean, you didn't seem to...
We never thought anything about it, really. School kids sometimes kind of met up here on the road and jawed at one another, but, you know, it wasn't anything serious. They used to cut ice on the river and put it in ice houses. And my dad and my mother's brothers, they'd drive the team and wagon out on the ice, and they had this saw, and they'd saw hunks out of ice out and skid it up onto the wagons and then haul them out to the hills. And we had an ice house right out here in the yard. Just the roof was sticking out, of course. You know, they dug down and just put a roof over it. And they put that ice down in there and put straw. And usually, if they could get it, they'd use shavings from sawmill or sawdust. That ice would keep all summer, as long as you didn't keep the door open too much. Of course, us kids used to slide down in there when it was hot and get cooled off and get our tail ends whipped for doing it. But it was, and we used it then to freeze ice cream, and you set your milk pail in water and put ice in it to cool your milk and different things like that. they didn't do that for too long. Refrigerators came along. They had ice boxes, and then there was somebody hauled ice and went down every week and put ice in their ice boxes.
What a life.
Hmm?
What a fascinating life.
Ordinary. Pretty ordinary.
That was the late Lottie Klein talking about her ordinary life along the Missouri River. She shared her oral history with Meredith Ludwig in 2004 for Ludwig's Missouri River Folk History Project. While Ludwig has made collecting oral histories a career, collecting stories from elders in your life can be something you can start right now. Again, here's Meredith Ludwig discussing what it takes to get started collecting oral histories.
It's really hard to capture the story of your own relatives. It's different. I suggest you start by finding someone else outside your family to practice with. And what's wonderful, there's so much material on the internet now of how to conduct an oral history. You can find wonderful questions. StoryCorps has just really opened this up, and you've no doubt heard those oral histories, and they're just wonderful, the gems that they play. So it's a wonderful time to start collecting. It's never too late, because there's always a wonderful story of an old person not too far from you. So, you know, I don't sit around moping, oh, I wish I'd gotten grandma before she died. But it's just, you know, there's so many grandmothers out there that have wonderful stories. The other thing is equipment has gotten so wonderfully accessible. You can afford it. You can get a really nice digital mic, and then you can put it right in your sound file, right into a computer, and you can take it from there. You can edit it. You can easily, all these things are so easy and inexpensive now. It used to be very expensive to lug around all this equipment, and now it's just, we can do it. So I just encourage you. You will have a wonderful time. I've had just a great time.
That was Meredith Ludwig. She wears many hats. One of them is oral historian. It was about 10 years ago that she was the driving force behind the Missouri River Folk History Project. She shared two of those stories tonight, those of the late Lottie Klein and Fred Early. Meredith, I hope you'll come back and share some more with us in the future.
I'd love to.
KBIA's digital content director Nathan Lawrence and MU student Braden Kobeski contributed production assistance to this evening's program. Also, special thanks to the State Historical Society of Missouri's oral historian, Jeff Corrigan. And, of course, thank you to Meredith Ludwig for sharing memories of the Missouri River folk history. We'll tap these oral histories again in the coming months. For this show's executive producer, Darren Helwidge, my name is Trevor Harris. Thanks for listening to Thinking Out Loud. Join us again next Tuesday at 6:30 for a new episode right here on KBIA.